right, guys. Welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I am Brad Howard, and I've got John Barbin on the phone. And today we're going to talk a little bit about something I alluded to in an email earlier last week, and that is implied goals. The fact of the matter is that a lot of the advice that's being passed around out there, now the person that's giving you this advice is assuming that you want a certain goal, and that goal might not necessarily be what you really want. So there's kind of a disconnect there. So we're going to talk about that a little bit, and I think this is also going to lead into a little bit of why people have unrealistic expectations on why certain things are going to work the way they do. So John, I know you had some thoughts on this. Why don't you go ahead and take it away?
Yeah, well, the implied goal thing, I like the way you stated that. That was kind of your statement, and I was trying to ask you what you meant. The implication of almost anything you read about in diet and fitness is that there's an ideal that you're shooting for, but it's never really stated exactly what it is. It's just, it's kind of like somewhere in the distance. It's something different than what you are, but it's not exactly what, there's not an exact picture or an exact image. It's sort of just different. And as long as it's always just different than what you are right now, that works because, you know, you're just trying to move away from what you are. But moving away from what you are doesn't necessarily mean you're moving towards anything better. It just means you're moving away from it. So the idea of weight loss, it's, well, just less. Less isn't much of a goal if you don't have an end game there. You know, I can weigh less in the next couple of hours if I just don't eat anything and, you know, sweat out a little bit of water. So, like, how much less? Like, what's the point of it? Like, that sort of thing. Same thing with gaining muscle or gaining weight. Well, like, what shape, how much, where do you want to gain it? Is it all in your legs? Is it all in just your left leg? Like, what's the point of being heavier? What's the point of having more muscle? Like, what's the goal? So I think we all have this idea of, you know, some kind of idea of something that might, we think might look better, or a body image, or maybe some sort of health status. But nobody really seems to take the time to pin down the actual metrics. Like, what exactly do you mean? Like, how exactly are you going to get there? How long exactly do you think it'll take? And then from there, it gets a little, it's not as fun to market it, I guess, when you make it really exact like that. It's a lot easier to do, to sell diet books, workouts, you know, supplements, you know, machines, all kinds of stuff with the less defined nebulous goal, the implied goal of something better. Then to drill down, well, no, give me exactly what you're talking about.
Right. So, I mean, a perfect example would be muscle building. So if you, like, here's one thing I was thinking about, you know, while I was walking on the treadmill. And I'll explain why I walk on the treadmill instead of do any other type of cardio in this as well, because this is going to play into account. Not saying you need to do what I do, but I will tell you why, the exact reason I do what I do. But let's say in the bodybuilding realm, let's say if you're going through a bodybuilding, like bodybuilding.com or, you know, any of those bodybuilding forums, and you're looking at the articles and maybe, you know, chatting with the people in the forum, and they're telling you what to do to gain muscle or gain weight, the implied goal there is that you want to be a bodybuilder, basically. I mean, you want to gain as much mass as possible in any way possible. Now, what most guys think is this. When people think about gaining mass and gaining weight, very rarely are most guys thinking about gaining from the waist down. When somebody says you can gain 30 pounds of muscle, most guys that I know of intuitively think that they're going to add that to their upper body. But what's not stated, and so what you are assuming out of that is that you're going to add all that muscle to your upper body. What's the actual reality of the goal itself is that, you know, over half that is going to need to go to your legs, if it's even possible.
Yeah, like if you – go ahead.
Yeah, well, and then the other thing is this, okay, and when it goes into implied goals and stuff like that, when you go to that particular extreme, the implication is – or what's implied is that you're going to do whatever is necessary to get that specific bodybuilding goal or gain that mass. Like, everybody in there, that's kind of the overall assumption of the guys that are actually teaching to everybody else. So chances are the guys that are actually doing the teaching or doing the, you know, kind of being the leaders of the forum or being the leaders writing the articles and a lot of things are probably, they have the mindset that I'm going to teach these guys what to do in the way that I have already done it in the past, which means that that could be steroid use, that could be, you know, any other drugs. Even if I'm not telling people I'm using them, and that's the key, that my assumption is these guys that I'm telling, they're going to take my advice and then on top of that, figure out a way to get the results in whatever way possible. And if that means use drugs, that's in that realm. That is implied in that conversation, but you might not pick that up.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there, you know, there's other things implied, like the degree of intensity you'll put into it, like how dedicated you are, all of these other things. So it may not, you gotta take the, any kind of, I guess it's advice or guidance or, I don't know what the exact word is. I suppose it's advice. You have to take it with a grain of salt and try to and understand. Like if you didn't ask for if you didn't have a very clear question you asked about a very specific goal, most of the stuff you're reading is just going to fill the gaps in for you. It's, like you said, it's going to fill in a body weight gap. It's going to fill in how much muscle you want to build, how intensely you want to build it, you know, how quickly you want that to happen. Other things in your life that you'll sacrifice in order to get there. Like all of those things are going to be implied for you and almost sort of fed to you that, oh, that's the type of life you have to live to get to this goal that you kind of never asked for in the first place. So, mm-hmm. It's really just people telling you about how they did it and how their lifestyle happens to work to make that happen. And, you know, if you want that, that's fine. But if you don't want that, why would you even be there listening to it or reading about it?
And here's what's even more important, and we run into this all the time. The people that you're getting advice from, most of the time, and they don't even know it, because this happens to us too, and I promise you it does, but they assume that you know more than you do. So they're going to talk to you like you know more. Or what's even worse is that they're going to talk to you like you've been training in a certain way, you know, that you're not brand new or that you're kind of used to this type of jargon. So the assumption and the implication is that your starting point and your starting base of knowledge is, you know, maybe a step below theirs, not two or three steps or four, where there's a huge disconnect.
Yeah. It's kind of like when you're in first year university or college, whatever you want to call it. And you have that professor that knows what he's doing, but has no idea how to tell you, like can't relate to the students at all. So everything just goes right over the student's head. You're like, well, but isn't this his field of research? Doesn't he know what he's talking about? And he does. He's just so far gone compared to where you are. He doesn't know how to put it in terms that is useful to you.
Right. So, okay, for perfect example of implied goals. Like I say, when I'm walking on the treadmill, I usually just do it to clear my head because it helps me think and get ideas and stuff, but I usually read like celebrity magazines or I'll read like fitness magazines, not to get new ideas or not to get new information, but to get a different perspective of what people are thinking, because that's generally one of our biggest challenges is trying to get the, what perspective are you guys coming from? And one of the things I noticed the other day was in the celebrity magazines, and I like looking at these things because, you know, these guys have all of it's readily apparent they have all the same insecurities that, you know, regular people have. They just have money to artificially fix a lot of it, you know, for like use like liposuction and all this other stuff. So I'm reading about this, you know, about this woman and her diet plan or whatever, and her basic goal was that, you know, she wanted to be skinny. But the reason she wanted to be skinny, the implied, like her thing was is that, you know, this is how I lost weight. Her thing was is that she assumed that meant that it was going to make her look better. But if you looked at the after picture after she lost all this weight, she actually looked worse. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, you're looking at this thing and the assumption and the implied goal for her was that losing more weight and getting thinner would be more attractive. That was the implication. same thing with like run. Like I was reading one of the magazines, and they were talking about doing a lot of running and stuff like that. The implied goal there is health, you know, quote unquote health, and being able to run. There's no look that's implied there. I mean, if you're reading that, that's the disconnect. You're looking at it going, okay, so if I do this and I get quote unquote in shape, it's going to make me look better. And so I'll just run. But what they were talking about in that article was that it's improving your health markers and stuff like that. But what you took it as is this is going to make me more attractive. So there's a disconnect. So that's what we're trying to get at with, you know, like if somebody's giving you advice, like let's talk about interval training, cardio, or whatever. Talk about the implied goals here. Let's talk about all the variations of different types of cardio, you know, whether it works or not, what's being demonized. I mean, it all freaking works. I mean, we've already proven that to a degree. It all burns calories.
Yeah, it's like the question, which one's better, cardio, like steady state cardio interval training? And my answer is always whichever one you like doing is the better one, not the one that someone told you is better for some reason, you know, for fat burn. Neither of them is better for fat burning. It's just how much time it takes to burn a certain amount of calories. My assumption is that you would like to spend less time, not more. But like Brad, in your case, you'd rather actually just walk on the treadmill and you get the double benefit of it's good for you for some standpoint. It's going to be burning some amount of calories more than if you were standing still, and you have the added benefit of thinking, clearing your head, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So interval training for you is probably it would be the worst answer. Because you're like, no, I actually want to spend 20, 30, 40 minutes on the treadmill thinking about stuff. Interval training consumes too much of my attention for it to allow me to think. So then it's actually not beneficial in your specific case.
Sure. I mean, the assumption for interval training is, and in every facet of life that I have seen, is number one, you don't have a lot of time. Number two, we need to figure out a way for you to work out, and being able to do this in less time is going to figure out how to do that. And then, maybe some muscle mass increase a little bit or something. But I mean, it's all based on the goal. Like when somebody asks, what's better, steady state cardio or interval training? To me, you have to attach a goal to it first, because when you talk to somebody about the assumption of it, I mean, the implied goals and the assumptions a lot of times are wrong. I mean, that people start talking about metabolism, you know, exercise, you know, the EPOC or whatever, you know, what is it, the excess post-exercise oxygen consumption or whatever, which, you know, I think you've talked about before, isn't as great as most people think it is. And the more in shape you are, the actual faster you recover from intense exercise.
Oh yeah, the more in shape you are, the faster you recover. It's there is no energy lost. I don't know. I guess a lot of people have never taken physics or something. There's no loss of energy anywhere. It's all measurable. So if you the faster you run, or the more intense the exercise is, the bigger the EPOC is. But that's only making up for the energy when you get from aerobic to anaerobic metabolism. Your quote aerobic metabolism still catches up. That's what the EPOC is. Like, that's why you're out of breath for a certain length of time after the exercise. All it's doing is catching up to sort of balance out the amount of energy you burnt during the exercise. I mean, but you can't just force the EPOC thing to last forever, because the type of higher intensity exercise that causes it is also the type of exercise you can't do for very long. So yeah, you can do 2 hours of like steady state slow cardio. You can just walk for 7 hours, and the minute you stop walking, it's not like there's hours and hours of EPOC. That's because you were walking at a state that your aerobic capacity could handle, your aerobic metabolism could handle. But if you sprint, you can't sprint for hours. You can sprint for a couple of seconds, and yeah, then you build up what's called an oxygen debt, and your body replenishes the oxygen debt afterwards when you're breathing heavy for a minute or two. But neither's better. All it is how many calories can you burn in an amount of time. That's where the confusion is. Did that make sense?
Yeah, and here's another thing. And you know what? The sad thing about it is we're throwing a bunch of this stuff out, and you're probably gonna end up confused. Like well, what works? And we're going to go ahead and say this. Dude, it all works.
Yeah, running works, walking works, sprinting works, because it's painfully simple the way the body works. I'm gonna kind of lay something out here. It's how you eat and how you exercise makes you look how you look right now. So if you go stood in front of a mirror with no clothes on and you looked at yourself, you're like, all of the food and the way I eat, my eating patterns and my daily activities and how I exercise or not makes me look like the thing in the mirror that's looking back at me. So all I can do is eat more or less to make the thing, make the person looking back at me in the mirror weigh more or less from a fat standpoint. And from an exercise standpoint, I can do more or less exercise to, at least with resistance training, build these muscles bigger, as much bigger as genetically possible, and do a little bit more exercise to burn a few more calories to try to get rid of some of this body fat. And that's it. The patterns you do those things in, at least from a cardio standpoint, it's irrelevant. It's just more. The more cardio you do, the more calories you burn. And then from a muscle building standpoint, resistance training, there's a few more nuances to resistance training, like which muscle groups you choose to train, you know, getting into plateaus. Like, there's some complexity to resistance training, but in general, it's consistency. If you don't train, your muscles are going to get nowhere.
Right. So even going back into assumptions and implied benefits, I saw something on a blog where, you know, a gentleman was saying that he was trying to lose body fat and he was trying to gain muscle at the same time. And he was lifting weights. He said, hard. He said he was pounding the weights 5 times a week and he was interval training, you know, high intensity 4 days a week. And he was trying to lose body fat, but he was trying to gain muscles on his shoulders. And the first thing that popped in my mind was this. If he's truly doing, see, that's the other assumption. The assumption is that people actually know what high intensity interval training is. I'm telling you, man, the people I see in the gym that are doing any type of intervals, it's not high intensity. It's just like intervals. It's like jog, walk, or it might be a little bit speed up and walk, but it's not like frantic sprinting, about to fall off the treadmill and then walk.
Yeah, if you look at some of the research done on this type of training, it's really intense. Like when they put someone through a protocol, I think most people would be shocked when they see how hard some of this stuff is in an actual training protocol. Like people probably don't know what 70 or 75% VO2 max actually feels like. That's right at what's called anaerobic threshold. That's right when things really become difficult. And most people's intensity is lower than, it doesn't even approach what the research would have even indicated. And I'm not even saying it does anything anymore, with any more efficacy or, like, it's nothing special, but what we're saying is, you know, when people say they do HIIT, they probably aren't even doing it. And when people say, you know, their intensity is at a certain level, it probably isn't. Like, it's not everybody, but what I'm saying is a lot of people misinterpret how hard it really is.
Right. And that's another thing that's assumed too. Assuming implied is intensity. I mean, same thing with lifting weights. Everybody and their mama, well, maybe not mama, but let's say daddy, they will tell you they're banging the weights out in the gym. But man, I go to the gym. I see everybody lift. There's nobody in there that's really lifting hard.
It's a small percentage.
It really is. I mean, you really don't see very many people actually going the distance and really getting the intensity up. You just don't see it. So that word intensity, like people that are telling you what to do, it's implied. Like the implied goal or the assumption is that you're actually doing and understand how intense really is. Intense is not like a fluff word. I mean, intense is like, if you've seen Crank, like that movie Crank, when he's like all jacked up on adrenaline, running around like a madman. I mean, that's like intense. Intense is not like, oh yeah, I'm going to go jog around the block.
If you've never pushed yourself to the edge, I think we've talked about this before, you don't know where the edge is, so you kind of don't know what intensity is. I mean, you don't need to make yourself sick or break, you know, rip a tendon or something. It's just, you know, the intensities, you got to learn what intensity is, and that's something that's sort of impossible to teach virtually. You kind of have to see it happen live. So at some point in your life, you have to eventually push as hard as you can possibly push to know what real intensity feels like. And you know, it's kind of hard to push yourself. It really helps when you have other people around to help you push that hard. It's not a natural feeling to push that hard. It's got to be something you're driven towards. You've got to have, that's kind of where the specific goals come from. That's kind of where the social network and a partner and you know, those sort of things help with the idea of getting, and some kind of coach to help you show what kind of intensity really is. Otherwise, all of this is just, who cares? I mean, if you're talking about stuff that is, if you're talking about training patterns that require a specific level of intensity, but you have no idea how to get there or have done to do it, well, what are you talking about? You're talking about stuff that you don't even know how to do.
Right. A perfect example is, you know, right when we first came out to the Adonis workouts, I actually got 2 points right now. When we first came out to the Adonis workouts, like a bunch of guys were, you know, in the forums being like, oh man, these are too easy. And as soon as somebody said that, I knew right away that we had to demonstrate what type of weight we were actually lifting in these workouts to get people to scale up and to go bigger, because they weren't lifting as much weight as they could, number one, could, and number two, should. So that right there told me that the intensity level of their workouts just wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
I mean, that was blanket. I mean, after the first workout, if you weren't tired after the very first one, if you weren't tired and like, holy shit, you didn't use enough weight. Point blank.
Yeah, if it says do 10 reps, it doesn't mean do 10 reps of a weight you could have done 20 with. It means 10 reps of a weight that the 11th is not possible.
Right. And so, and back it up. So going back to the comment on, you know, doing, you know, trying to gain mass, lose body fat. I mean, this gentleman only has like, he's like at a 32-inch waist, but he only has like a little bit of body fat. He says he's got a thin layer of fat on him. So at that point, to me, that's kind of just going to happen just through normal life. I mean, it doesn't even seem like it would have to be concentrated on, especially if he wants to gain mass. To me, he should just cut out all the interval training and all that stuff he's doing, because basically that's just another recovery time that is taken away from his strength,
mm-hmm.
that he could be focusing into getting stronger.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the fact that he's like, you can't burn fat and gain muscle at the same time, but using the protocol like that, where you're just continually beating the shit out of yourself every day.
Yeah, it would be much better if you just cut down a few more calories than continuing with interval training for the sake of trying to remove a pound or two of fat. I mean, just give it a little bit more time to get rid of it.
Yeah, I mean, and actually, I was just kind of thinking about it. I was like, you know, the funny part about it is that what might happen in that scenario, if you just drop the interval training, actually focus more on actually lifting and lifting heavier, in the end, not only would he get stronger, but as far as calorie burn, even though we're not measuring it, he would probably end up burning more calories because he's lifting more overall.
Or at least, yeah, just channel all of the extra exercise into the weight training session instead of the interval training.
Right. Or at least burn the same amount. That's the funny thing. It might even be the same amount, because with that increase in weight, you know, if somebody's doing intervals, they're only doing, you know, 20. If they're doing them right, they're only doing 20 minutes.
The issue there is you shouldn't rely on exercise to burn fat. That's a hopeless situation. Now, I know people are like, well, if it's just calories in, calories out, doesn't exercise burn calories? And like, yes, of course it does. But we've already discussed that all of the different ways you can compensate for that calorie burning by eating just a few bites more, by resting a bit more, by maybe even just sleeping a bit more, being less active on other days when you're not doing your interval. Over time, exercise has never been shown to help burn body fat help you lose body fat overall, unless you're controlling for everything else. But since exercise is such a potent stimulus to cause you to want to rest on other days, to cause you to eat more when you're not really paying attention to it, it's you need to be meticulous. You're actually forcing yourself to be very meticulous with your diet and your lifestyle patterns when you're not in the gym by doing so much in the gym, especially interval training and cardio and all that kind of stuff. So for short periods of time, like during a contest cut down, like for bodybuilders, or you know, if you've entered some kind of contest, you can do it, because most likely while you're in that cut down, you're also counting calories. You're also being meticulous and all of that stuff. But if in general you're kind of have this goalless idea to exercise away fat, it's never going to happen.
Right. I mean, and for me, I mean, this is just my personal experience, and, you know, other people have different personal experience, but I don't work on any type of conditioning when I am lower on calories at all. Like, that's why I'm saying I'm just kind of walking, you know, and weight training, because number one, it makes me feel bad. I mean, it makes me feel run down. I mean, you're already putting one stressor on your life, not eating a lot. And then you're going to put another stressor on your life doing, you know, this intense interval training. And then you're going to put another stressor on your life. And it doesn't have to be interval training. Maybe if you're running at 5 miles or whatever, and then you're trying to weight train too. I mean, you've got all these stressors that are coming in at one time, and it's just going to drag you down, and you're not going to be able to do any of them as effectively as if you just really focused on really one or two.
Oh, yeah. Well, I went from 217 to 180. I was 181 yesterday. I didn't do any cardio. I didn't do anything. I just did weight training. Like, I didn't do anything extra. It was just all diet. So,
right.
I mean,
so,
I don't know why. I mean, don't know where I would fit it in. I don't know how I would get. I don't know where I would put all that. Like, if I don't know what people think you need to do to lose weight as far as cardio goes, but I'm sure they think you need more than zero, which was what I did. So I just don't know where I would fit it, because I did enough weight. Like, my regular weight training workouts are more than enough work in the gym. I don't need to add in more. I mean, I'll walk every now and then just to walk, but it wasn't, you know, maybe once or twice a week. Like, you know, if it happens, if it doesn't, no big deal.
Right. You know, like, kind of my perspective now, you know, after all the years of being through this and watching people and stuff like that, and watching people do what they do, and just getting clear on what actually does what, like the 80% rule. If we talk about Pareto's principle, what's the big idea? What's the big thing that really does all the work? Well, if you want to get bigger muscles, you got to lift bigger. And if you want to lose weight, you got to eat smaller. Those are the two big ideas. And they are separate and essentially, like, you can compartmentalize them, I guess you could say. You take this one, and this is what I do, and everything else is kind of minutia, you know. If I eat less, I'll get there. If I lift weights and the heavier I go, then that's going to be the case. I mean, remember, I mean, and again, my personal experience right now is that I'm stronger. I'm not stronger at this very moment because my shoulder's kind of weird, but I'm stronger now at this point in my life overall. Let's say within the last 3 weeks, if we take this as a stopping point, than I have been at any time in my life, and I weigh less now than I've weighed in a long time. My strength has been going up. I'm not even on creatine right now as well. And so,
and some people might assume that that's, you know, how does that work if you're cutting down? How are you building strength and muscle while you're dieting down? And they're mutually exclusive. You don't. Muscle building and fat loss aren't really linked. Like, you, they're not tied to each other.
I'm gonna put this out here. You tell me if this is right, wrong, inconclusive, or whatever. But the way I'm thinking of it is that if I've still got fat on my body, then energy wise, going through a workout, as long as I'm not beating myself up doing all this crazy cardio and stuff like that, even if I'm in a caloric deficit. Energy-wise, I will have enough energy to gain muscle.
Yeah, because you have a caloric surplus wrapped around you in fat.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, that's another reason why I don't get, like, why people who aren't complete, like, absolutely, totally shredded, think that they need to, over-consume calories to gain mass. I'm like, you have all those calories stuck on your body. It's called body fat. Like, you don't need to eat any more. You already have them there.
Right.
Like, you haven't even tapped into them yet. You don't need to eat more. They're like, go stand in front of the mirror. Anything that you don't like, any extra fat that's like on your body, you can use that up. You don't need to eat any more.
Right.
Yeah. So no, yeah, you're right. You just, you know, and whether, okay, so let's say you need a couple more grams of protein. Fine, eat a few more grams of protein. But other than that, there's, you know, there's no proof you need any extra calories. And even really lean people still have a significant amount of body fat stored on them. From a survival standpoint, they can still last, a decent amount of time burning off the fat that's still on them. I mean, besides the fat that's totally visible when you have like extra fat, there's intramuscular fat, there's fat inside your muscle cells too. So there's energy there. Like you kind of have to take that with a, you can't see it or touch it, but there's energy, there's still energy stored in there. And it's not necessarily, it doesn't mean you're burning fat mass there, or muscle mass. There's still fat in there that has stored energy you can burn, even if it looks like it's not.
Right. And like I say, we'll see how it all ends up in about 3 weeks when I'm pretty much where I think I want to be. I mean, based on the numbers. So, you know, if we're wrong, which I don't think we're going to be, like I say, I mean, proof's in the pudding. I mean, I'm not weaker now than I was, you know, a week ago, and I've been significantly down. I think the big key is when it comes to strength is just not beating yourself up, because you're eating less. So that means you probably have, maybe a bit more of a recovery time. I mean, that just kind of makes sense to me. But
yeah, I've been like that during my lower calorie phases in the last few months. I did notice my strength was compromised, but I mean, when I say compromise, it's like I was going from using maybe 100-pound dumbbells on a particular lift to 90s, like something like that. So it's, you know, and my training partner would be like, oh, you know, that's – and it's been coming back lately, because now I'm my calories are creeping back up a bit because I'm not going as low. And so now I'm almost back up to full strength. And he's noticing it. He's like, oh, yeah, you're back up. But it was never really that far down. It's not like I went from hundreds to 50s. I was off by 10%, not 50%. But for me, that's noticeable. Like, I can tell. I'm like, sure. Well, that's definitely the lighter dumbbell than I normally use. And also part of it's consistency too. Like if you tweak a shoulder, tweak anything, miss a day or two, you know, that those sort of things, like strength is, yet it has to be measured on a consistent basis with the exact same lift. Because people keep asking about, like you said, correlating strength, like you put up in your video, correlating your strength and stuff to your size. And there's general trends, but I think you would need an aggregate of all of your strengths and all of your lifts. Not like that's what you did. You showed a bunch of different things. And it's hard to quantify. People keep asking me, how strong should I be at a certain size? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, how much do you lift? Are you good at that particular lift? Which lift are you testing? Do you do that same lift? Like, do you have an injury that holds you back from certain lifts? Like, it's like, I don't know. If you never squat, then you try to squat testing. That's going to be a lousy way to test. But if you do incline dumbbell press a lot and you know how much strong you should be at it and you know how strong you were 6 months ago, then that's a pretty good test. But that's why strength is hard to quantify. So, but if you do an aggregate of all your strengths and all the lifts you normally do, that's your better number of telling you how strong you are. Oh, and another thing on strength, it's rep range specific. If you're not training for one rep max, your one rep max won't change much, even if you're getting bigger and stronger at your 10 rep or 12 rep max of that lift. So like if you do 10 reps all the time and 12 reps, like in our program, you're doing 5/8, 5/8, 13s. If you're doing those all the time, you'll get better at those, but you won't get better at your one rep max because you have to train all the way up at 1, 2, and 3 reps for your one rep to go up. So that's how specific strength testing actually has to be.
Right. Well, and the other thing, for me, the reason I put that stuff down wasn't to give a benchmark for everybody else to compare to. It was to give a benchmark on myself to compare where I am before and where I will be after.
Right.
So, I mean, like, here's a perfect example talking about that kind of strength assumption or whatever. You know, you said plenty of times before that, you know, people that are good deadlifters make bad squatters and benchers.
Oh, yeah. There's biomechanical – that lengths of joints versus length of your torso versus tendon insertion. There's biomechanical structural things that affect – how good or not good you are at particular lifts. Those things may also affect, to some degree, how much better you get at that one lift or how limiting that lift will be for you. Like, I'm just a lousy bench presser. Brad Pelon's a fantastic bench presser. I'm stronger than him in shoulders. He's, you know, at shoulder press or military press, whatever. That's just how it works. My training partner, the really, really big guy, I'm way better at him than pull downs or chin ups, but he's stronger than me in like low pulley row type things. So it's, you know, it's just the way we're shaped. I mean, he's so big that there's no reason for me to be stronger than him at anything. But pull downs is just one thing he's lousy at.
Right.
I mean, but if you saw him, you're like, there's no way you're stronger than that guy at anything. But it's just, there's a couple things I have him in just because of the way we're shaped.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
And there's just nothing, and we do the same workout, and, you know, he's lifting like way more weight than I do in most stuff just because he's a true endo and he's just enormous. So I don't know, you know, I don't know. Just, well, as soon as he puts his arms up to pull down, he's just in a weak position. I don't know if it's a bad shoulder or what it is, but he just simply can't catch me in that one exercise.
Right. Well, it'd be like me and my brother and calves. I could not work calves for like 3 months, and I could still walk into the gym. I could load up a leg press machine to 1,000+ pounds, push it up, and I could do calf presses until, I mean, I could do 21 of them, no sweat. Same thing with, you know, seated calf raises or whatever.
Dude, with your calves, you could push that leg press into next week.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's just genetically, my family has bigger calves, and they're not like fat. I mean, it's just a more muscular. Our legs are just a little bit just bigger, not ugly big, but just bigger. And it's not because I've been training them any certain way. It's just that's the way it is. My brother's the same way. I mean, we can walk into a gym and, you know, you just throw it up there. And there it is. Seated calf raise is the same thing. The one it looks like when you're sitting down, it's like a little penis coming out. I mean, I can rack that thing up full of 45s, as full as it'll go. And I could do 5 to 8, depending on how the pad sits.
And you gotta, this comes into accepting your genetic limits. At some point, if you've been training for any length of time and you've looked around the gym and saw how big and strong different guys are, and you're stronger than certain guys and you're bigger than certain guys, and there's other guys that are bigger and stronger than you, and everyone falls somewhere on the spectrum. At some point, you have to come to terms with where you are in that spectrum and accept the fact that you can manipulate the look and the size and the shape of your body within that spectrum, but you can't jump the spectrum. So ectos can never become endos. Endos can't become ectos. And that's it. Now, the spectrum's not huge. It's just a few pounds, but a few pounds makes a big difference. Like, my training partner is probably one of the biggest and strongest people I've ever met. And he, you know, if he'll take a year off of training, go into the gym, and he'll still be able to bench press 300 pounds for reps. Like, I don't know anybody – I actually don't know anybody else on earth that can do that. I'm sure there are other big guys, but in my circle of people that I know, like, well, he's the only guy I know that's that strong. And then when he starts training, that number just keeps going up from there. Whereas if I take a couple – like if I took a year off, I would not be putting 300 pounds on the bench press. I'd be down in the 180 range, and that would be like hurting me. So, but I don't think a day in his life he's ever – at least since probably first year of college or last couple years of high school, I don't think he's ever been weaker than 250, 270 on the bench. Like that's just been his like – like he's embarrassed if he can't push 275 pounds for reps.
Right.
And most people train their whole lives and can't get there.
Right. And it's funny, you know, the best part about it is that, you know, instead of, like we say it all the time, instead of getting all worked up about what you suck at, like for me, like personally for me, if you look at any of my pictures I put up where I have a shirt off, like my front looks nothing like my back. Like at all. It's like two totally different people. My back is broad and, you know, it slenders down V taper. If you look from the front, even though I lift pretty good chest movements and stuff like that. I mean, my shoulders are pretty big, but chest wise, it's just not there. So, and same thing with biceps. It's like my lifts with bicep stuff they always are lower than tricep lifts. By at least 25%, you know. So let's say just kind of as an example, if I'm doing, let's say hammer curls, I mean 50s might be where I'm at, you know, for, you know, 5 to 8 depending on the day. But if I'm gonna do like Tate presses or whatever, which is kind of the same type hand position or whatever, I mean I can do 70s with those.
Yeah, it's just yeah. Well, and Pilon's a good example. He's got a for his frame, he's got a huge, powerful chest, and it's just.
Right.
He's always been that way, and it would be stupid for someone else to think, I'm just going to try to do what he does and build a chest like that. You can't. build the chest that you have as good as possible. But you can't just create like the advantage that he has. It just everyone, and this is what I'm getting at. This is what we were talking about. Everyone's going to have their unique, even though we have our number, the golden ratio and the Adonis index, and how we basically say for your height, there's just one index. But that doesn't mean you're going to look identical to each other. Like you and I just look different, even though we're the same height and our indexes are similar. You know, everything just looks a bit different, and it just a couple nuances make all the difference in a unique look. So, you know, I guess don't look to other people as the model of how you should look. Use the mirror, and you just if you want to change what's in the mirror, you can. Really, all you can do is make your muscles bigger or burn fat. That's about all you can. Because we've had questions about, like, how do I improve the peak on my bicep? Or you can't change, like, I don't know, I hope I'm not the first one to say this, but you can't change the shape of a muscle. You can just only make it bigger. So right. And then you can just choose which muscles you want to try to make bigger. Yeah. And that's how you change the overall shape of your body, by selecting muscle groups to improve on. And there's lots of muscles, and there's lots of layers of muscles, so there's lots of different things to focus on. But one particular muscle, like you can't make your bicep peak any more than it, like that doesn't even make any sense. All there is your bicep and how big it is. And then that's it. There's nothing else you can do with it. And, you know, sometimes part of this comes from, people saying this in magazines where they don't know what they're talking about. It's kind of like you can't work your lower and upper bicep. You can't work one end of a muscle and not the other end. It's kind of like pulling, that's the same as trying to say I'm stretching half of an elastic band without stretching. Right. Like, but you're holding it on either end. You either stretch the whole thing or you don't. And that's how your muscles work. So for instance, for your chest, the muscle fibers run horizontally from your arm across your chest to your sternum. Now, because of the way they run, you can actually work upper and lower chest, but you can't work inner and outer, because that would be like inner and outer would be like trying to pull on one side of the muscle fiber but not the other. So that kind of doesn't make any sense. Same with your biceps. They run along the length of your arm. So you can't work the top of your bicep and not the bottom. That's impossible.
Right. You know, and the other thing too, going back to implied goals and assumptions, you know, when you're asking people advice on things, like if you've got a guy who's got peaked biceps, and right, check this out, because this is going to be really important. You've got a guy who worked his way up, and it just happens to be his bicep eventually shaped out that way. He's going to come out with something that says, here's how you get – or if you ask him a question, says, how did you get your biceps to look that way? He's going to tell you how he did it. And your assumption is, and it's implied, that yours is going to look exactly like that if you do the exact same thing that he does. It will be like somebody asking me, dude, because people ask all the time, and they say, how in the hell did you build calves that big?
You picked the right parents is what you did.
Right. And that's the thing is I could be like – try to make it sound like that I had everything to do with it. And I was like, oh yeah, dude, I've been pounding away at the calf machine, dude. And it's this and that. You just do this or do that. But the fact of the matter is, if you did that, you wouldn't see, like they're always pretty big, but I can get them like defined and like an inch up and like plump in like a month just by training them. And so,
but other guys could spend their whole lives and still not do that.
Exactly. If your calves, because mine are just fuller, but there's some guys that just have really high calf muscles. There's no way that their calf is going to drop as low as mine does.
Yeah, you can't change the inherent shape of your muscles. You can only just make them bigger. That's it. That's like all you can do.
Right. So I know we're beating this point to death, but that's the thing is that we're not trying to. We don't want to say people have unrealistic expectations because we're trying to. Like crush your dreams and stuff like that. And that's not at all. What we're doing is we're trying to save you from a lot of freaking heartache and just mental
anguish.
Yeah, exactly. Wondering why something's not working. I mean, I've come to grips with the fact that, you know, this is the way it is. So I don't even think about it anymore. I love when summer comes around so I can wear shorts. Great. You know what I mean? That's something that's good for me. You know, tricep wise, it's good because that's a bigger part of the muscle. It just so happens that works. Same thing with back. I mean, it makes my shirts hold a little better or whatever when I'm walking away. Great. I get comments on it, but nobody ever comments and says, dude, your chest looks awesome. It's either shoulders or back.
Right. And Pilon will always get the chest comment because he has such a well-developed chest, and it's just like his chest or like your calves. It's just that's the thing he's got that's really good.
Yeah. So if me and Pilon were you know, walking or in a bar or something like that, and we were talking to two chicks or whatever, and, you know, it would probably end up being, well, what do we like better, the big chest or the big shoulders?
Kind
of. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. it's just funny, but I realize that that's where my strengths are. Yeah, sure, I try to improve my weaknesses and all that stuff. And that doesn't mean I can't necessarily lift as much.
It's just the way it's shaped.
Sometimes you just got to realize it. It is what it is, man.
Yeah, basically. Well, yeah, and at part of – yeah, you can't – yeah, I think guys maybe think they can shape muscles more than they can. Like you can, right. All you can do is make them bigger, and then whatever shape they happen to be, they're just bigger in that shape. And I mean, a good example is if you just look through, this is where bodybuilders are useful. If you look through magazines or look through bodybuilding websites or just Google search, every one of them, even though when they're on stage they're very, very similar, the actual shape of each muscle is slightly different on each guy. They just everything like. That, like I said before, like the angle of their traps, the angle of their shoulder, everything's just a bit different, and they all have their unique kind of look. And, you know, measurement-wise, they probably all have 22-inch arms. They probably all have, you know, like whatever, 70-inch shoulders or however huge they are. And, you know, but the each one's got its own slightly unique shape. And so do you. You have your unique shape, too. And until you are lean enough to see it, you won't even know that. So, yeah, and a lot of this argument is kind of irrelevant until you're lean enough and muscular enough to even see any of this anyways. So, I mean, unless if you've done all the work and you're lean and you've got like all the muscle you can pack onto your body, however big you can get, and then you're looking in the mirror and you're like, oh, okay, that's where everything is right now, then maybe perhaps you focus your training on one or two areas to see if you can't maximize one or two muscle groups a bit more. But until you're like refining like that, there's lots of work to go until you get to the point where you're being that specific and that picky.
Right. And here's something to think about. Let me give you, and I promised I would tell you my thinking on me doing what I'm doing and what my goal is and what my implied goal is for myself and what my assumptions are for myself. Cause that's important. I think that people need to know why I'm doing what I'm doing. And the way I'm doing it, instead of just seeing what I'm doing and copying it, assuming that it's going to be the best fit for them, there's a reason, a specific reason that I'm doing what I'm doing. But first, let me tell you this. I was telling John about this a little bit earlier. What a lot of people don't realize is like, okay, so when I started college, I remember me and a buddy of mine, we decided we want to start lifting weights, and I never lifted it ever in my life, really. I mean, maybe some during my basketball. The coach was like trying to get us to bulk up over the summer, and I remember for a fact that when I got under the bench in basketball in high school, actually this was in ninth grade, he wanted us to bench 135 by the time we got to 10th grade, right? 135. Three of us, you know, because we were guards, three of us, 95 pounds. And I remember we did a burnout set with 95 pounds and like a drop set or whatever until we got the bar. And then he tried to make us do push-ups afterwards, and we couldn't do it. We couldn't do one. Okay, so 95 pounds, right, when I was there. In college, when I first started, I remember for a fact being on the incline bench and only having 10-pound plates or two 10-pound plates on the bar for incline bench, right? I mean, now I'm up 225. But that was in college. So that was, what, 19, I'm 32 now. Am I 32? Yeah, 32. So that's over, what, 13 years? So that it's kind of all progressed. And, you know, just back and forth and stuff like that, just doing different stuff and lifting different ways and things like that. But I will tell you this, I've never been stronger than I am now doing our stuff. That's just fact. And I'm older now, so I don't have the juvenile muscle growth to base everything on or anything like that. I'm stronger now than I was, and I'm doing less. Overall, because I, you know, back then I was doing all the cardio. I mean, I did it. I remember one time where I was, you know, creatining it up, and I was, you know, proteining it up all the time. And I remember I was getting stronger. This was probably about 5 years ago, and on all my lifts, and I was interval training like crazy. and, you know, I was dropping body fat and I was getting strong, but I am stronger now than I was then. And I'm leaner now than I was then. So just to kind of put things, all that stuff in perspective, that's the reality of that situation. Okay.
Yeah, and that's a good story to illustrate. You can't just keep doing more. At some point, you have to stop and allow the rest to do the work it's supposed to do.
Right.
And you can't. And the biggest mistake of all, at least from a body, for people who have body fat issues to try to lose body fat, never assume your exercise is going to burn the body fat. Just let your diet deal with that.
Right. So that was the big aha for me is when I switched, when I stopped worrying about diet, building my muscles and workouts, burning body fat. When I actually switched them over and let the workouts take care of building muscle and the diet take care of burning fat and controlling fat levels, that's when everything clicked. Okay. Now, let me get into why I'm doing what I'm doing now. Okay. My philosophy right now is this, is that I typically will lift, 4 to 5 days a week, and it just depends on time. It depends on if I can get in or not, or it depends on my day. Typically, I wake up and go, and it's really going to matter on how I feel that day. But typically, my workouts are less regimented than my nutrition is at this point in time. Typically, I won't work out on Sundays, but you know, maybe if I do work out 6 days a week, one of them might just be going to shoot ball or something like that. When I get to the gym, I get on the treadmill and walk for 20 minutes. The first reason I do this is because it's cold as hell here. And if I don't...
It ain't that cold.
Man, dude, it's cold. I want to be in Miami right now. But
I want to be there.
Well, it's snowing right now, dude.
Oh, really? Is that a big deal? It's been snowing here for like 6 months.
Dude.
Okay, you know anyways, let's get back to your philosophy.
Here's where applied assumptions, applied goals and assumptions come into play. This is a perfect example right here. So anyway, for me, it just helps me out. Plus, we run a company, right? So part of my day is I need time to actually think about, you know, things. I mean, I actually have think time because I typically don't set that aside for myself. I don't have time to think about, you know, what I want to accomplish in the day, you know, any ideas that I might have, things like that. So I'll walk for 20 minutes ahead beforehand. Nothing serious. We're not talking about speed walking or anything like that. Just a leisurely stroll. I'll put the treadmill up to about 4 incline or whatever, and I'll just walk for, you know, 20 minutes. Then I'll go into the Adonis workouts. Typically on most days, I will add in a big body, workout to warm up with, before I jump into it. So that's what I've been doing nowadays. So maybe I'll do like rack pulls, or maybe I'll do like, you know, some type of deadlifting motion on the hammer strength, or maybe I'll do squats,
You mean like almost something that kind of works the whole body to warm up?
Sure.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, and basically what I'll do is I'll do like 5 sets. I'll just work, you know, slower, and then I'll work to a weight to where I do 5 reps, you know, not killing myself, and then I'm like, okay, I'm done with that. And then I'll go into, you know, my thing. So obviously squats will go before leg day. So that's just kind of, and maybe a leg press day too. Just, it's all those big body type things. Mm-hmm. And that's just what I do, and it just helps me warm up, and it also kind of helps me get my mind right that I need to be lifting and mm-hmm. not pansying my way through. And so then that's what I do, and then I go through our workout, and you know, whichever. So right now I'm doing build right now. Plus the other reason I do it too, honestly, fact of the matter is I hate doing 8 and 13 reps. I like doing 5, so I want to get something where I can do 5 reps because it just feels cool. That's just me. So that's what I do. And then after that, I get back on the treadmill and I do the same thing. And all I'm doing in these things is I'm reading the rag mags, like all the celebrity magazines, and you know, reading the health and fitness magazines or Shape or whatever. And the reason I'm doing that is because I'm looking for perspectives. Just like today, the reason I got the idea about the implied goals is because people people have different perspectives based on what they want and where they're coming from and things like that and what people are thinking. And so I'm always looking for that because you really can never know where people are coming from until you can understand the perspective that they're looking at it through or what glasses they're viewing the world from. So it's kind of an interesting exercise, and it kind of really just gives me ideas and stuff. And actually, it improves the way we communicate with you guys. So that's what I do. So the sole purpose of me walking isn't necessarily to, quote-unquote, burn fat or do cardio. It's basically a way for me to set aside time to actually go through some brainstorming and collective thought process. Plus, not calming, but just kind of trance-like. You just kind of can do it. It's mindless, and you can just
a lot of runners I know. That's what their best think time is during their run.
Yeah,
like they actually can't wait for it because that's when they get to do that's when their best clarity of thought comes.
Sure. Yeah, it's just kind of clear and it's just there. I don't know why it's worked that way, but I just found that's the way it works. So that's why I do what it does. Not because it burns the most fat, not because I'm trying to burn cardio or improve any type of conditioning. Obviously, that's not going to improve any conditioning. I mean, just quite frankly, that's why it is. And then diet-wise, my biggest goal number one is obviously, I've been living with, my girlfriend for 2 years now, and it's awkward when I am eating differently than she is at home. So my nutrition works within that. So my first overall goal is to work within that. So that means I need to eat dinner every night. Okay. And typically I need to eat some variation of what she's eating, because number one, you don't want to make.
So eating with her and eating dinner with her and similar food with her, that's the fixed variable that you don't want to change. You change things around it.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, so I know pretty much on any given day, I can actually go 500-600 calories at that meal, and that's going to be fine. It's just a matter of portion control for that. And that's not a big deal, right? And then, so I've just structured it so, because like Mondays are really busy for me. So I typically can just power through the day and not eat till dinner time. So for me, it's not a big deal. It's just easy for me to work with. So I just do it. And then, on Tuesdays, I might be a little bit hungrier. So I'll actually eat the breakfast and do, the turkey sausage and the eggs. I mean, we're talking, it might be 300 calories or whatever, depending on how many eggs. It's just like six. And sometimes I include yolks, sometimes not. So that's that. Wednesday, I kind of, do another fast or whatever until dinner time. Thursday, same thing as Tuesday. Friday, another fast. And then Saturday, it's not a free-for-all, but, it's that 2,000 at maintenance level thing where I can kind of do whatever I need to do in case she wants to make breakfast, which will be a little more fattening, like, real sausage and, cheese and all this other stuff. And then Sunday, because it's kind of another day that it's just easy. I drop it back down to 1,000 calories. So for me, it's very simple, clean. I don't, nobody knows what I'm doing.
Well, besides everyone you just said it to.
Well, yeah, except you guys, but nobody in my personal life right now knows what I'm doing. Nobody has any clue. But as far as they're concerned, I'm magically losing weight, and it's because I have this hidden laser in the back that just chisels my body fat away.
You know what's interesting? I just thought of, nobody knows what anybody does. Like I have friends, people are like, I've seen that guy eat and he eats so much and he doesn't gain weight. It's like, yeah, but you saw one meal, but did you see what he ate for the rest of the day? Did you see what he ate for the rest of the week? Like nobody, think about this right now, for everyone listening, who sees you eat every single meal, every single day of even the last 2 weeks? Nobody on earth has seen you eat everything you've eaten all week. And I don't mean just meals. I mean everything you drank, stuff you ate in the car, like snacks. Like you are the only person who actually knows everything that's gone into your body in the last 2 weeks. And even then, you probably can't. I guarantee you can't remember even 3 days ago. So nobody actually knows what anybody eats. We have a rough idea, but no one can actually pin down even a week's worth of eating unless you were strictly regimented and wrote it all out. And the only people that I know that do that are bodybuilders. And other than that, and only when they're dieting down for a show. But other than that, it's actually a mystery to everybody. And it's one of the it's the major confounding variable in all of nutrition research, because people will chronically lie about their diets. They'll never admit it. We've proven that people can't even remember what they ate 24 hours ago. So 24-hour diet records are basically useless. And any research done based on diet record is basically pointless research, because diet records are meaningless. So it's nobody knows what you eat, and it's actually none of their business anyways. So right. It's up to you to decide how you want to eat and, you know, where you want to get with it. I guess we should wrap this up.
Well, let me touch on that point real quick.
Sure.
Just really quickly. Always remember this too, is that nobody is ever going to be like completely honest with you. Like, even I wasn't completely honest with you, because there are some days, like when I say my guideline is 500, 1,000, 500, 1,000, 500, 1,000. I mean, it's not like strictly regimented. It's like eyeball, ballpark. Like, I have an idea that it's around that. I mean, it could be 400. It could be 600, 700, but it's like around there. Same thing with 1,000. It could be 900. It could be, you know, 1,300. I mean, just depending on serving size. I get a ballpark idea of where it's at.
Yeah. I like to look at it as you're approaching your limit at a particular number. And then as you, like, if you set your number at 1,200 calories for the day, and you think of that as you eating things that you have a rough idea of what their calorie count is, you have that feeling well up, and, you know, you're like, okay, that was 700 calories. Now I know I've got about 300 to go. You probably, you know, you might nibble on a couple other things, and you're like, yeah, that pushes me up to around 1,100. So now you're like, okay, I got about 100 to go. Maybe you have an apple and something else, and you're like, okay, I know I'm somewhere right around 12, and you know you should sort of cut it off there. It's because the food you eat, all the food you eat, no matter what you use as a calorie counter, if you use a book, if you look at labels, those are all just estimates. Like, you can never know exactly how many calories are in the food unless you bought the raw ingredients yourself and crafted everything by hand, which most people don't do. And then the amount, your BMR is also an estimate. So when, you know, so everything's an estimate. So what I like to tell people is always assume that the food counts, the calorie counts of the food you're eating is underestimated. So assume there's more calories in the food than it says. And then always assume that your BMR is lower than what any calculator said. And then so with those two assumptions, you're always erring on the side of more weight loss instead of less.
Right. Well, I was reading something the other day, as far as the convention on the government mandate for how you list calories. And it was saying, and I have to relook at it, but I think I got it right. But anything that's less than 100 calories, you get to round to the nearest five.
Oh, you have to.
Yeah, but if it's over 100, you can round to the nearest 10.
Yeah, so if you over a course of a week with all that rounding, plus serving sizes aren't exact, you know, because me and Pilon did this. We bought some muffins and we looked at the label on the package of the muffins. Then we weighed them and they had like a good, they were almost 10% variance in their actual weight. So on the package, they gave a calorie count for a specific weight. So let's say they were whatever, 50 grams or whatever. I don't know if that sounds too small. And then, when we weighed them, they could have been as heavy as 70 grams or, you know, as light as 45. So they weren't all the same size. So if you just read the package, you go, oh, one of those is 150 calories, but you ate one that was like 20% bigger, well, it would have had 20% more calories.
Right.
And that goes without saying with everything. Every product, anything you've ever eaten isn't exact. It's just an estimate.
Right. And I guess where I was going to with that before we kind of got off on the calorie thing was basically this, is that nobody is ever going to tell you the exact truth. Number one, because they either don't know, or number two, every single person out there is going to put themselves in the best light. So they're going to shortchange what they're telling you and make themselves look better. That's just human nature. It happens. I often say this, that nobody will ever do anything that is against their own best interest. If it's not in their best interest, they will not do it. I don't care who it is. I mean, you can frame it however you want to. You could say, like, a guy that, you know, he wants to go out with his buddies and his wife says no and he stays home. He is in his mind assumed that it's in his best interest that his wife stays happy with him.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with, like, you can even bring up, like, Mother Teresa. You know, given being the most giving person of all time, if it didn't make her happy,
right, it's still in her best interest.
Yeah, it was in her best interest to be happy, and that's what made her happy, and that's why she did it.
Yeah, it's just a matter of what you value more. That's all.
Right. So you have to realize that anybody that's talking to you, and stuff, I mean, yes, they will have good intentions, but it is still, I mean, even us, no joke. I mean,
oh yeah, it's in our best, what we think we're right when it comes to all of this kind of stuff. So we give this to you because we think that it's better that people listen to us than anybody else.
Right.
Because it eventually benefits us if people believe in our system more.
Yeah. Well, and for the fact of the matter is that the more people buy our stuff, the more money we have, which means we can go
talk to more people.
Go talk to more people, which makes us feel good.
Right. Yeah. The best feeling ever is when someone uses our stuff and they're like, "Thank you so much for clearing the clutter." And you know, I've unsubscribed and like I just do this stuff now. And you know, that's why we do it. Like, that's the best feeling ever when we get one of those.
Yeah. It's not to make the happiness isn't to make the money for the sake of making money. The money is the vehicle to be able to get more of that
that kind of feedback.
Yeah, that feedback. It just happens. I mean, that's just the way it works. I mean, you got to have people buying stuff so that we can finance everything to be able to help more people and get that kind of feedback. There you go. That's our honest as it gets of why we do what we do. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, the other way around saying that is like, why don't we just ask you for donate? Like, just hand us money, please. For no reason. Just like, give us money. Like, we're trying to give you the best thing that we can in exchange for some money so we can build this industry big, build our piece of this industry bigger. Nobody actually wants money just for the sake of the money. They actually, there's something else always behind it.
Yeah. So yeah, we got off topic on that, but
we're all over the place.
Yeah. I was going to bring this up at some point anyway, kind of our philosophy of why we do what we do and why we sell stuff. Just because people are always asking you why you should give things away for free, and you know the internet costs money, it just might not cost you money. So it's interesting. If people really understood the back end finances of how to run stuff online and how much stuff really costs, that nothing is really free, they'd be really surprised. So it's got to happen. All right.
Well, let's wrap this up.
All right. Well, I mean, like I say, we kind of discussed the implied goals, and basically depending on who you're talking to, there's a lot of assumptions that they're making. A lot of times the assumptions may be that your goal is in line with what they are, their particular goal is, and most of the time it's not. Number two is that your knowledge level is going to be somewhat comparable to where they are, which chances are it never is. We run into this all the time. But what else?
Oh, I guess, well, my take home message is, when it comes to the look and the shape of your body, forget what everybody else looks like and is shaped like, and forget comparing yourself to them. Compare yourself to yourself as far as what you think you need to do. And all that means is if you go stand in the mirror, go stand in front of a mirror and look at yourself and realize that how you eat and how you train make you look like that right now. Doesn't matter what anybody else says. I mean, that's the proof. You're looking at yourself, and the only two things you can do to affect it is eat more or less to burn body fat or to put more body fat on. I don't know why you would do that. And then exercise in a specific way to build muscle. And that's it. That's all you can do. So the image you can see of yourself right now is a result of what you do right now. It doesn't matter what anyone else writes about. It doesn't matter what anyone else does. It matters what you're doing. And then from there, you can. That's your baseline as to where to go from, to where to move from.
Yep. I mean, perfect example. And then we're out of here. Back when I was younger, I had a buddy of mine that was. We did all the same things, all the same sports, everything, and we did body fat testing. I think in ninth grade, and it was basically like the skin fold around the calf or whatever, or around that part of the leg, and you know I had some of the lowest body fat in the class or whatever. And he was around on the same level, but that kid had abs that you would not believe, just naturally, just bam, 8-pack. They were there. And I didn't, And, you know, I mean, I had abs, but not like his, man. So, but everything was the same. We all did the same thing. We played the same sports. I was better than him at some sports. He was better than me at some sports. But his abs were ridiculous. Mine weren't. And that perfect example right there. So,
well, I guess the final one is accept your genetic limits.
Yeah, that was the first time I realized that this was the case. So, all right, hopefully we didn't beat everything to death, and you got a lot out of this, because, you know, this is really something we've been battling back and forth with people, just this whole preconceived notions of being able to shape muscles and do things and imply goals and even the assumptions that are flying across. So, like I said, I hope this helps you out. And I am Brad Howard for John Barbin. This is your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.